Hello everyone and welcome to Big News Thursday, the carryover of Big News Wednesday, where most of the news is, are they gonna do infrastructure? We'll have to see. We have a lot of evidence and not a lot of it looks good, but we're gonna be going over that as well as a lot of other stuff today, but not just me. I'm joined and very lucky to be joined by Bridget Todd, host of There Are No Girls on the Internet. Welcome back, Bridget. It's always good to have you.
I'm so happy to be back.
How has the podcast been going since last we spoke?
Oh, it's been going great. We're having all kinds of interesting discussions. This week, we're talking about that Amazon Prime documentary, LuLaRich, all about the company LuLaRoe, and talking about the social media firestorm around Gabby Petito. So been great. Please give it a listen if you're interested.
Yeah, man, there has really been a lot about that. I read an article about TikTok psychics channeling Gabby Petito, and I just thought, oh, thank God for technology.
Absolutely.
It raises us all up. It makes us better.
Absolutely.
Anyway, the theme of the show, as always, is humans. But anyway, but you're one of the good humans, so I'm glad to have you on the show.
I'll take it.
There are five, and you're one of them. So anyway, through the course of the next 90 minutes, although we have Bridget for 1 hour, so it's a very exciting first hour, slightly less exciting finale to the show. But we're gonna be talking about infrastructure as well as a very important update on the case of Sarah Everard, a case in the UK that we talked about what feels like several months ago. Corey Lewandowski is doing what Corey Lewandowski does, so that'll be cool. And updates on Britney Spears. My God, has that case been developing quickly recently? And then later on, we've got more assorted news and the return of Meanwhile In. So you're definitely gonna wanna stick around to the end of the show for that. But as we move through all these stories, if you wouldn't mind hitting the like button and sharing the stream, that would be great. And if you wanna send us tweets, comments, super chats, stuff like that, we'll respond as we go. But with all that said, Bridget, how would you like to talk about some news?
Let's do it.
Okay, let's do it because we must. Let's jump right in this.
I want to be clear that not voting for this tomorrow is not a permanent decision. We can always reconsider it when the time is right and when these tensions have been assuaged. And I do believe that they will be assuaged.
So right there, you have Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who was on Rachel Maddow's show yesterday. And look, she was very clear that the progressives are not going to back down from their stated position that's been stated for months about the need to pass the bipartisan bill and the reconciliation bill, the two different infrastructure bills simultaneously. That is the deal that has been out there for months. But she also seems optimistic that it will happen, although not necessarily today. Today is supposed to be the day that Nancy Pelosi puts forward just the bipartisan bill, because we can't forget, after months of saying they're together, she suddenly said, maybe they're not. And so she did the betrayal that, you know, we feared might come. AOC is saying there that though the progressives will vote it down if it comes by itself today, that does not mean that the entire process is done. And in theory, later on, they could once again handle both of the bills simultaneously. That said, there are a lot of flies in the ointment. We're gonna be talking about two of them in particular here. But before we get into those specifics, Bridget, it's been a bit since we spoke. What do you think about this process and the possibility of anything being accomplished later on today?
Yeah, I was actually quite heartened to hear AOC's remarks, and I kind of think that she's right. I think both of these bills are popular. I think that this is what the American public voted for. And I think that, you know, the tide is turning on whether or not corporate interests get to have a stranglehold on things that Americans say are their priorities. And so I was a little bit kind of, you know, grumpy about this going into the conversation, but listening to AOC kind of, I agree with her. I think that enough people are on board for the role that these bills will actually play in our lives. And so I think that it's possible the tide could turn.
We'll have to see. I mean, as of right now, earlier this morning, I've got a lot of stuff that we're gonna be throwing in that's just been me trawling social media over the past couple of hours. But Nancy Pelosi was asked if there would be a vote later today, and she said, that's our plan. Hour by hour, you're moment by moment, I'm hour by hour. But she still plans for it to happen tonight. And bear in mind, last night during the congressional baseball game, Nancy Pelosi could be seen working the phones from the stands of National Stadium near the Capitol, where Republicans and Democrats were facing off. The Republicans ended up winning 13-12, although Ro Khanna said that he wants to audit the results of that, which I thought was hilarious. Anyway, she was having some sort of intense conversation about it. And I really wish I got more clarity about what was intense about the conversation. Was it, we need to reassert what we said we were gonna do, which is both votes being held simultaneously? Or was it just, are we gonna beat the progressives down to supporting what we told them they would not have to support? I don't know, but as of right now, they're still planning on voting. And she has one other thing to say that I thought was interesting. It was, she was asked about conversations with Joe Manchin in particular, and she said, you think I'm gonna talk about my conversations with Joe Manchin in here? We're friends, we're Italian Americans. Okay, see what that has to do with anything. Like, okay, you're Italian, yeah, you're Italian, Manchin's Italian, Chris Pratt's Italian, it's wonderful. Like, what does that have to do with anything? I don't care. Like, but anyway, so we're gonna talk about Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, some of what they've been saying today and some of their massive hypocrisy that we haven't talked quite enough about. But I wanna give you first crack. What do you think about the role of Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema in the Democratic Party right now?
I mean, I think that you used the phrase fly in the ointment earlier. I think that's pretty apt. And I kind of go back and forth. I don't know. I know that before we got on together, we were talking about which one is sort of more frustrating. It's for a while it was neck and neck, but it's a tough call. I gotta go Manchin on this one. It seems like every time he speaks, he says something else that just makes me want to like explode in rage. Hearing now that he's trying to, you know, force the Hyde Amendment back into this bill, like the things that he says, it is so clear to me that he has just failed his you know, citizens of his, that, you know, rely on him to you know, I mean, he just is so out of step with the will of the citizenry. And yeah, so I gotta go Manchin on this one, although it's very tough.
It is tough. And I've said recently that that Sinema bothers me more because I feel like she's been more dishonest about her actual ideology. Joe Manchin has been relatively consistent about it. But that said, I don't know, he's been really trolling us this morning as we're gonna go through. Let's talk about some examples of that. First of all, last night he put out a statement saying the current proposal is fiscal insanity, saying, while I am hopeful that common ground can be found that would result in another historic investment in our nation, I cannot and will not support trillions in spending or an all or nothing approach that ignores the brutal fiscal reality our nation faces. He denounced an approach that he said would vengefully tax for the sake of wishful thinking. So again, we get to what this is really about. It's about taxing the people he actually cares about, the wealthy corporations, things like that. And he is not gonna stand for fiscal insanity. When you wanna spend trillions of dollars, that is fiscal insanity. Sorry, when you wanna spend trillions of dollars, that's fiscal insanity. When Joe Manchin calls for up to $4 trillion in infrastructure spending earlier this year, that presumably was not fiscal insanity. Unless he just has traditional insanity, because he seems to have forgotten that that's what he was calling for just earlier this year. So that's fun.
It's just so hypocritical and so see-through. I think anybody can see what he's doing. It's so dishonest.
Mm-hmm. Is it fiscal insanity to spend trillions on our military constantly? Just forever, always. No matter what the current military situation is. We end a war, we spend more. Is that fiscal insanity? Nope, that's free. The right people make money off of that. So let's go into some of the other things that he has been saying that's super dishonest. I mean, I've got a billion of these. Some of these are oddly threatening and corrupt. Some of them are insane. So he was quoted yesterday as saying on the deal to link both bills together, not with me, I never knew about that. I never heard about that, that the two of them were going to be together. Why do you think we worked so hard to separate them? That was yesterday. What do you mean the bills are together? Okay, well, because back just like 2 months ago, he said of the two-track approach, doing them together, it's the only strategy we have is two tracks. And by the way, you don't even need a quote of him acknowledging that he understands that's what the thing is. Every single person, people who don't pay attention to politics knew that that's what's going on. He definitely did. And this is where he starts to run neck and neck with Kyrsten Sinema, because you're just, I almost said a bad thing. You're just lying to us now at this point. We know you know what it was. And he's just lying about that actual process to make his betrayal of that process seem less like a betrayal of fundamentally everything that the Democrats and Biden are trying to do.
I mean, I think that you exactly nailed it, a dishonest betrayal. I also think, does he really expect people to believe that he didn't know this? That like, he is a lawmaker and this just was something, he was just now finding this out. It's laughable. It's just such a dishonest scam, and he should really be ashamed.
Yeah, 100. Here's some more that he should be ashamed for. So he said, "I've never been a liberal in any way, shape, or form. So if progressives want a bigger reconciliation bill, elect more liberals." So on one level, like, okay, I mean, he's kind of being honest. He has never really claimed to be a liberal. Again, I don't personally want more liberals, but they won the Senate, they won the House, Biden won the presidency thanks to the activism of these groups. So to just ignore that and say they haven't done anything seems insane. On the other hand, yeah, we need to. He's saying, unless I am literally irrelevant to the process, you cannot get what you want. It doesn't matter how many people you elect. As long as it's up to me, I will stop it. I will look at the whole country, the entire party, I will look at all the polls of what everyone wants and see the electoral will that gives them the majority. And I will say, no, I am the only person that matters until you make me irrelevant. And that is frustrating, but it's also power. You do actually have to win to win. And I have for years been fighting back against those, you know, members of this movement that try to convince people that you don't need to win to win. You could just feel really good about yourself, and that's better than winning. It's not. We unfortunately are still at the mercy of people like Joe Manchin. That's the situation we're in. And until we're not in that situation anymore, this is how our political conversations are gonna go.
Yeah, it's incredibly frustrating. And you really, if you take a step back, you really have to ask, like, what kind of political governing system do we have where two people can have such a stranglehold on the ability to get anything done, the ability to get progress, the ability for Americans to get the support they need, right? The support that they voted for. They, you know, we had an election, people voted for this, right? Like, what kind of political system do we have where two people can just get in the way of progress this way? It's incredibly frustrating.
It is. And you just pointed out that people voted for this stuff. Biden was clear about what he was going to do. They're now trying to do it. He said, Josh Krauschauer quoted him, Manchin advises other Democrats to take the more liberal parts of the bill that can't pass on the campaign trail and use it to rally progressives to the polls. We already did that.
Yeah.
We did that. That's why Biden is president right now. But again, unless he is literally irrelevant, none of it matters. So that's fun. Now, there's also weird stuff like this. He was asked by Ari Nader whether an energy company he founded is a conflict of interest as he negotiates reconciliation, which has to do with the climate and energy production, stuff like that. He says, I've been in a blind trust for 20 years. I have no idea what they're doing. Ari pointed out, you're still getting dividends. And Manchin responded, you got a problem? Well, yeah, presumably a problem with corruption. But there's more. He says, your son still owns it, doesn't he? And Manchin responded, you'd do best to change the subject.
Ugh. Why? I mean, doesn't that tell you so much?
Yeah, I mean, about how corrupt, and he feels like he can just batter people down. I'm a senator. I can be as corrupt as I want. Have you seen Kyrsten Sinema? I can do whatever I want, and you need to shut up about it. And the issue is, there's little protest. There's protests against Sinema, there's protests against Manchin. We have an actual leader of the Democratic Party. And what is the leader of the Democratic Party doing about the obstruction, about the threats, about this bullying of reporters, about the corruption that the reporter is asking about? What is Biden doing about it? What is Schumer doing about it? What are any of the Democrats actually in charge of the party doing about it? So far as we can see, literally nothing. I can't give you one thing that they're doing to fight back against this. And look, it's not an easy thing to figure out. For both Manchin and Sinema, I don't know that I have any idea what pressure point they actually have. I don't think they care if they get reelected. And even if they do, it's years away. They're already wealthy. They're certainly gonna be even more wealthy in the future when they eventually get hired by one of these lobbies to work for them as lobbyists. So I'm not entirely sure exactly what Biden could threaten them with at this point, except perhaps an eventual primary that they might or might not even care about at this point. So.
Yeah, I think especially with Sinema, you mentioned earlier that you feel that she is more dishonest. And it's so funny because I remember when she first got elected, there was so much fanfare around how she was going to be this, you know, champion, and she was, you know, people were really excited about her, and just how disappointing she ended up being for a lot of folks. I mean, I kind of agree with you. I don't really know what the end game looks like for either of them, but I don't think they care. I don't think they care about being primaried. I don't think that's really a motivating thing. And so that does leave this question of how do we move forward with these two folks who are so interested in dragging their feet and making, you know, almost making this process feel like a hostage situation. How do we move forward with that much of a barrier? I really don't know.
Yeah, presumably one answer that is wholly unacceptable is just elect way more actual good Democrats. So let's just work and persuade and organize for years and gradually do that. And then eventually, someday we'll have an infrastructure bill. We'll be passing it in a radioactive wasteland, all that's left of our country, but we'll have it at that point. That'll be fun. We can clink together cups that have just a little bit of the last remaining water in our nation to celebrate.
Yeah, anyway. I mean, it's so depressing. And I think that you asked a really good question of like, where is the leadership in the Democratic Party? Where, like, who is handling this? Who is, you know, championing us towards progress? And it's sort of a little disappointing, this idea of like, oh, we just have to make sure we get better folks in office. But it's like, we can see plainly that there is a real crisis of leadership where folks are not standing up and being like, no, we're gonna take care of this. We're gonna figure this out. We're gonna figure out a way to get to progress.
Yeah. Well, look, we've talked about Manchin. Let's turn now to the other. Kyrsten Sinema is so aggressively condescending towards her voters, towards reporters, towards the country, that I feel like it really is going to break through. And I have a couple pieces of evidence of that. But I do want to point out the hypocrisy, because I have said one of the things that bothers me more about her is I feel like she's more dishonest than Manchin. Manchin sucks, and he's never claimed not to. Whereas Sinema has implied that she actually gives a damn about people and clearly doesn't. So you probably know that she has told Senate Democratic colleagues that she's not okay with literally any increase in corporate or individual tax rates for the wealthiest people in the country, literally anything. A more extreme position than literally some Republicans in the Senate. Of course, way back in 2011, she tweeted asking big corporations and the rich to pay their fair share is common sense. Not class warfare. But then the class warfare, I guess, happened, and lobbyists appealed to her, and they won that battle. And so now she doesn't hold that position anymore. At one point, there's this tweet, corporations spend in secret to influence Congress and rig the game. Yep, they do. And they got you. They got you, Sinema. You pointed it out, and then they got you. It's like something out of a horror movie, I guess. But the condescension is even worse. So, she was asked by Frank Thorpe, who I think works for NBC News, what do you say to progressives who are frustrated when they don't know where you are? And she said, I'm in the Senate. He said, there are progressives in the Senate that are also frustrated that they don't know where you are either. And she said, I'm clearly right in front of the elevator. Which is a longer version of just giving a double middle finger to all of her colleagues, all of her voters who are suffering. She doesn't care at all. And the evidence that I have a little bit of it starting to break through is there was this interaction between Don Lemon and Chris Cuomo. I want to play that for you now.
What's happening in Washington? You know, you have the Democrats. They're making their own problems. We're going out of our way to do it in this society.
Well,
right,
it's
now.
Not necessarily. Well, Democrats, yes. But you also have two Republicans in the Democratic Party who are making problems for the Democrats, and that's Manchin and Sinema.
That's your opinion.
No, that they are Republicans. Come on.
No, that's your opinion. They're both Democrats.
That's not an opinion. Just look at the way
they are both Democrats. Yeah. There's a D after their name. That's the fact.
Yeah. Okay. All right, that's something.
No, don't let it get in the way of your opinion.
No, no.
I don't want you to be burdened by that. I'm sorry, I shouldn't even have brought it up.
I see them as Republicans, so maybe you're right. I see them as Republicans, or acting as Republicans.
All right.
All right, but listen.
And I see you as cheap. But I love you, D. Lemon.
I don't get the cheap thing. I guess I don't watch. Maybe it's a reference to something. But the fact that they technically are Democrats, of course, does not rebut the point that Don Lemon is making, is that in their actual actions, they represent the exact same interests and they hold many of the same positions as Republicans. I think that's the point he's making. I'm surprised to see Don Lemon making that point. I don't think of Don Lemon as any kind of like massive progressive or anything like that. But I love them pointing out that this is not about like Pramila Jayapal, like is screwing over Biden by threatening to vote down the bipartisan bill, or AOC, or Tlaib, or Omar, or anyone. This is about the two Republican Democrats. And I'm glad to see that on a network like CNN.
Yeah, I loved this moment. I completely agree with Don Lemon here. And I think you're right. I think that we're starting to see this kind of breakthrough, and people say like, oh, wait, it's these two, right? Like they're the ones standing in front of the progress. And so I completely agree. And I love that little moment. I think they may be, you know, Democrats in name. There might be a comma D at the end of their name, but they are Republicans for all intents and purposes.
Yeah. Now, that is not to say that everyone is acknowledging the position that these two senators hold. I was reading this article in the New York Times, and I read a line that just flames on the side of my face. And it was in an article that was pointing out how frustrated many voters in Arizona are with Sinema. And this is the line: a breakthrough on the legislation could quell much of the criticism and burnish Mrs. Sinema's image as a deal maker who shepherded a related bipartisan infrastructure bill through the Senate. That sentence is absolute dog crap. When you stand against something, and let's say it somehow still passes, over your obstruction, weaker because of the effect you had on it, you were not a deal maker. You stopped it briefly and you made it worse, and yet it still happened. No. A deal maker gets something through that otherwise wouldn't. Like if there's lots of people and nobody can agree, but she came together and she brought it. No, she's the obstacle. That's the New York Times saying that. That is just Sinema campaign PR that they're saying for, in an article that acknowledges how many of her former supporters feel fundamentally betrayed by her. They're doing PR for her. There's more to it. It's a frustrating article. Look it up. Helene de Cochrane in the New York Times if you want, but so frustrating. Anyway, any final thoughts on Sinema Manchin and the infrastructure process?
Yeah, they are bad people.
That's really it. Yes. Okay, we're gonna take our first break. When we come back, we got a lot of other news to get to, so don't go anywhere. Whew, okay, I'm gonna try to get this voice and my throat and my head in order as we proceed into what is going to be the darkest block of news. So everyone prepare yourself for that, but let's talk about this. We've got an update on a story we talked about some months ago, and it has to do with the case of Sarah Everard, a case from the UK of a missing woman that caused a lot of social and cultural rallying around this case. A lot of it productive, some of it not. We broke that down in an interview that's available on the channel with a journalist from the UK. But we want to let you know about what actually ended up happening with the tragic disappearance of Sarah Everard. So, there has now been a London police officer who has been sentenced to the remainder of his life in prison as a result of what has been determined to be a kidnap, rape, and a murder of Sarah Everard. And the actual details of it are even more devastating than just the sheer facts. Let's tell you about it. Prosecutors said that Wayne Cousins, the London police officer, who was then a serving officer with London's Metropolitan Police, handcuffed Sarah Everard and showed her his warrant card so he could get her in his car, and that he then drove her to Kent, raped, and killed her. And in fact, there is even surveillance footage that was shown in court, a still of it, of the interaction between them. After being put into the police officer's vehicle, Miss Everard was driven out of London before being raped and strangled by the police officer, who then burned her body in a patch of woodland near Ashford in Kent. And so we've got more details, and we will get to them. But this is literally a police officer who uses the authority that they have to just approach someone, but apparently had gone out that night looking for one lone female for this, and then like more fundamentally abused that authority than I can imagine happening to then take this woman, rape her, and kill her. It's just disgusting, Bridget.
Yeah, it's really horrifying. This is a tough case, you know. It's horrifying to think of someone actively going into the police force just because they know that they're going to be able to abuse that power and abuse that trust and abuse that station that police officers have over regular citizens. And so it's such a horrifying case. My heart goes out to her and her family and her community. And I think that it's a case that we should be asking some tough questions about. Like, I'm not surprised this case really did start this conversation and this sort of cultural moment, because I think it's a case that really does raise a lot of important questions.
Yeah. And I look, maybe it's just me, but I guess we've covered, I don't know, 5,000 cases of US police officers abusing their authority. And like to what you were saying about somebody going into the police force to then abuse their power in the US, I don't find that surprising at all. I feel like that's, for some people, that's the appealing thing about being a cop, is you will get to, at the very least, lord it over people, if not intimidate, physically abuse, and potentially murder people. I feel like that's very appealing to a lot of, I'll just people. But I was gonna say racists here in the US. Clearly, we see this in a lot of different areas. I guess I expected slightly less in the UK, but humans are the worst literally everywhere. And it's just so disgusting. Like, you put yourself in her position, imagining what her experience was like, how horrifying. And now on the actual sentence, the judge, Lord Justice Fulford, said that the life sentence was given for the murder, saying what earned Cousins a whole life tariff was the abuse of his position to commit his crimes, meaning the court would treat it as seriously as a murderer carried out for a terrorist motive. The sentence means Cousins will die in jail. We have a statement from the judge who said, "I have not the slightest doubt that the defendant used his position as a police officer to coerce her on a wholly false pretext into the car he'd hired for this purpose. It is most likely that he suggested to Sarah Everard that she had breached the restrictions on movement that were being enforced during that stage of the pandemic. There was significant planning and premeditation. The victim was abducted. There was the most serious sexual conduct. The defendant was responsible for significant mental and physical suffering, which he inflicted on the victim before her death. And the defendant concealed and attempted to destroy Sarah Everard's body." And there's just 60 people, well, now I guess 61, that are serving whole life sentences. I guess because it's the UK, they feel, Bridget, the need to sort of explain the extenuating circumstances. For me, I can't conceive of ever allowing this person to walk free after a premeditated abuse of their position with a kidnapping, rape, murder, and an attempt to hide the entire situation. I can't imagine why you would ever trust that person to go free and potentially prey on other people.
No, absolutely not. I completely agree. And I remember reading something that some bystanders saw them interacting and saw him putting cuffs on her and putting her under the car, and that they just assumed like, oh, she must have done something wrong. She must have broke the law. And how he really used his position as a police officer to set up this kind of crime that he thought he would be able to get away with. Like, banking on the fact that, oh, if people see me as a police officer having this interaction with a woman, they're not gonna think twice. I'm a police officer, right? Like, it really shows the depths to which he premeditated this and had these intents to carry out this act and just get away with it. I think that if he were out there, if he had not gotten caught, he probably would keep doing this, right? And so I completely agree.
I think that was the idea, yeah.
Someone who cannot be, you know, allowed out on the streets.
Yeah, I don't know. If anyone in the chat feels like this is an excessive sentence, feel free to let us know. But I feel like there does not need to be this much defense of it. In any event, I also want to let you know there was some great additional work from our producers. So at the time, initially, when we were talking about this case, there was this movement in the UK to draw attention to these sorts of attacks, kidnappings, and things like that. And as I alluded to earlier, it was mostly productive. People who feel like the situation of women was being ignored there, as it is basically everywhere around the world. There were others who were trying to weaponize it. At the time, I believe there was ambiguity about who had actually done it. They were trying to weaponize it against immigrants and things like that. But in any event, The movement continues. There is British women who are attempting to draw attention to another case. It's a British teacher named Sabina Nessa. There's a man who's been charged with murder of that. They're attempting to draw attention to that as well. It's possible that we will do more coverage of that in the future, but we do want to let you know that that's out there as well. Any final thoughts about this, Bridget?
It's just horrifying, and I think survivors are watching. I think that these cases bring on these movements because so many of us are survivors of sexual violence and gender-based violence. And I think the time has come where we need to listen to survivors and build a world that does not include sexual violence.
Exactly. Yeah, and as we, my final thought, as we alluded to when we talked about this, when we were talking about the Texas law, the basically forget the Constitution, forget your fundamental reproductive rights. The vast majority of sexual violence is not someone lurking in the bushes or whatever. And I feel like very often keeping that up as a myth that is held up as that's what this is allows a lot of this violence to continue. But that said, those cases still exist. This is one of them. Like there are both. We need to address both as a culture, whether in the US or in the UK. Now, let's turn back to the US where we have a related case, I guess, as we talk about this. Remember Corey Lewandowski, a former longtime high level aide to the president, all around horrible guy. We'll remind you of some of his past incidents. He is now being accused of making unwanted sexual advances to a woman just last weekend during a Las Vegas charity event. So this is Trishelle Odom, the wife of an Idaho construction executive, John Odom, alleges that Lewandowski repeatedly touched her, including on her leg and buttocks, and spoke to her in sexually graphic terms. She said that he in fact stalked her throughout the evening, and we have more details on what he's alleged to have done. According to a statement provided by the Odom family attorney, Lewandowski allegedly remarked on the size of his genitalia, described his sexual performance, and showed Odom his hotel room key. After the incident, Odom told people that Lewandowski repeatedly spoke about sex while using expletives. Odom left the room, but was soon followed by Lewandowski, who remarked that she had a nice ass, according to the statement from her attorney and another attendee or the comment. Lewandowski also threw his drink at her, and it landed on her shoe in the bottom of her dress, and then he called her stupid. We'll have a statement from both of the attorneys after this. But look, Lewandowski is known for a long time to have been a really horrible guy. I don't know why we would imagine that once he was a little bit disconnected from Trump, that would stop. But apparently he is out there, and this is what becomes of that crew. They felt emboldened in their time with Trump, and now they're just out there continuing to prey on people, all around horrible people.
Yeah, I mean, you used the word emboldened, and I think that's exactly right. I want to be clear that, you know, Trump is not the first person to, you know, behave boorishly and in a way that is like so sexist and disgusting in office. But I do believe that the Trump administration created a system where men know that they will be rewarded for that kind of behavior, where men feel like it is a way to demonstrate power. And so I think that, you know, the fact that Trump himself is credibly accused of sexual abuse of women really says something. And so I think it's not surprising to me that Corey Lewandowski, in his time with Trump, has learned that you know, this kind of behavior is equated with power and wealth and status. And I think that's definitely something that the Trump ecosystem really trafficked in.
Yeah, and at least according to the allegations, the link there is fairly clear. This is not just purely hypothetical. In a statement from Odom's attorney, Lewandowski is alleged to have said, quote, repeatedly that he is very powerful and can destroy anyone, and that he is, quote, close with President Trump and can get anyone elected or can take anyone out. So yeah, so I don't just mean generally emboldened. He's literally using that connection during his predations to this day. Now, they say that this didn't happen. Mr. Lewandowski himself has not commented, but his lawyer says accusations and rumors appear to be morphing by the minute, and we will not dignify them with a further response. And we, of course, have to say at this point, they are just allegations. But it's also Corey Lewandowski. I'm not going to pretend that I don't bring anything into this consideration from the starting point. I will say some people are taking it seriously. So Taylor Budowick, who's a spokesperson for Trump, tweeted that Trump World, whatever that is, and dear God, I hope it's not an amusement park, has severed its association with Lewandowski. Pam Bondi, yes, that Pam Bondi, will now be overseeing the PAC Make America Great Again action. So they have cut ties with him, which doesn't seem like something you'd do if there was no evidence whatsoever. Or at the very least, regardless of why they decided to do it, it implies that the link he was using to try to threaten women into sleeping with him was not as strong as he implied that it was between him and Trump. And I will remind you that back in March 2016, man, I cannot believe that this was back in 2016. You might recall there was an incident where Michelle Fields, who was a reporter at the time for Breitbart, accused him of forcibly yanking her away from Donald Trump. And there was a video of that. He denied that anything inappropriate happened. It was clear that that's what he had done. So like, it's not like we have no evidence of this guy being incredibly forceful or violent or aggressive with women.
Oh, absolutely. I remember when that happened, she tweeted a photo of her arm and it was completely bruised. So I don't find any of these allegations surprising. I think that Corey Lewandowski is somewhat like, you know that quote, when someone shows you who they are, believe them. I feel that he is showing us who he is over and over and over again, and I believe him.
Yeah. Well, we have one other little aspect of the, oh, actually, I should mention this too. The next year, November 2017, Joy Villa, a Trump supporter and singer, filed a complaint stating that Mr. Lewandowski had slapped her on the buttocks during a party at the Trump International Hotel in Washington. It's unclear at this point what became of that complaint. So there is a pattern here. By the way, I saw this sort of last minute. South Dakota Governor Republican Kristi Noem has also severed ties with Corey Lewandowski, saying he was always a volunteer, never paid a dime. He only made coffee, basically, is what they're saying. So bear that in mind. They are cutting ties with him. Again, either just because it's not worth it anymore or because they think that it happened. I will also say there are stories going around this week of a supposed affair between the governor and Corey Lewandowski. The governor denies that anything like that has ever happened, calls it a disgusting allegation. I will vouch for the disgusting part about Corey Lewandowski. But she also said that the news existing at all was just the media trying to take down conservative women, which, I mean, that really has nothing to do with whether it's true or not. But anyway, Corey Lewandowski, he's been out of the news for some time and he is really back in it. I will just say that. Any final thoughts, Bridget?
I gotta say, I love the ways that people are distancing themselves from him. Like, oh, he was a volunteer. We never even paid him. Like when people will go out of their way to be that flamboyant about getting away from you, you've really messed up.
You definitely have. Yeah, no. And everybody hates Corey Lewandowski at this point. Anyway, that is gonna be the end of the second block. We do need to take a break. But when we come back, has Britney been freed? We're gonna give you the update after this. Okay, Mr. Unknown says, calling your rep is like slapping suggestion box on a trash can. Now, I don't think that that is true in all cases. I don't know, Bridget, feel free to disagree. I feel like there are some representatives who will listen to their constituents, but there are others that feel completely safe. They feel cut off from it. They're not interested in what their base thinks. I don't know, what do you think? Is it worth calling?
I think that some out there might be moved by calls from their constituents, but I don't think that Sinema and Manchin are one of them. I think that there are some that might be genuinely moved by that, but yeah, I don't think that they will be moved by anything their constituents have to say.
Yeah, well, we'll see. With that, you know what? Before we jump into the news, let me let you know about a few things that are happening. I already let you know about the Tier 3 Q&A. So there's still time. You can become a member at Tier 3. I also have to let, I don't know who left this message. Was it Marissa? I'm not sure who. No? Somebody left this message at my doc. Hi, John. Please tell Bridget I loved her last two podcast episodes. Please and thank. I don't know who left that for me, but oh, it was Sophie. Sophie, thank you.
Thank you.
By the way, did you know that, doesn't say what day, but International Podcast Day is either today or in the recent past or the recent future? I don't know. It doesn't say.
It's today.
But it's today? Okay, that's awesome. Well, then that works perfectly. So did you know that not only, Bridget, have an awesome podcast. Where can people find your podcast, by the way?
You can find us, we're called There Are No Girls on the Internet. We're on iHeartRadio. You can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast on.
Awesome. But we actually have a podcast too. The Damage Report is available as a podcast. We have a lot of fun putting together the podcast. We give them fun little names and everything. So yeah, you can get that everywhere podcasts are, and you can celebrate International Podcast Day with that. Also, the Acast app is another place that you can get access to the Daniels Report, as well as the podcasts of other shows on our network, our increasing suite of shows. Also, want to let you know that Indisputable is coming up after our show, as always. But perhaps even more important than that, Dr. Rashad Ritchie is currently up for Best TV Anchor in Atlanta Magazine's Best of Atlanta 2021, recognizing his work on Indisputable. Once again, Atlanta Magazine is ignoring my contributions, probably because I don't live or work in Atlanta. But anyway, we can help him to win Best TV Anchor by going on your computer or mobile device to vote. Go to tyt.com/Rashad and then write in his name, Rashad Ritchie, and submit your vote. You can vote once each day until October 11th. How amazing would it be if Rashad ended up winning that honor, and you can help to make it happen. And with that, also Power Hour. Nina Turner's show, you've probably seen the awesome, I love that graphic so much. Nina Turner's show is live Thursdays, including this Thursday, 8 p.m. Eastern time, 5 p.m. Pacific. You can tune into that, and it's available for members. And you can also, if you're not a member, you can sign up for membership today at tyt.com/join for all of the reasons that should be abundantly clear. That said, we are running out of time in our first hour, so why don't we jump into this next story? Over the past few months, things have been developing very quickly for the conservatorship that Britney Spears has been suffering under for a number of years. More and more revelations of the conditions, her own testimony, details of the corruption and controlling behavior of her father, documentaries coming out. Well, we have a development. In a major victory for the pop star, a judge on Wednesday suspended the singer's father from the conservatorship that has controlled her life and money for 13 years, saying the arrangement reflects a toxic environment. And bear in mind, back in June, she had said, "I am traumatized," asking for those overseeing the conservatorship to be investigated and jailed, and singling out her father as the one who approved all of it. And so we'll have some from the judge, but Bridget, I'm not sure if we've talked about this together on the show before, but what do you make of this most recent development?
I'm happy. I think that it's obvious that this conservatorship is toxic, is, you know, just some of the lines that have been crossed in her life are just unfathomable. And so I think one step closer to her being free and be able to make her own decisions is great. I think like the more you find out about the kind of things that go on in this conservatorship, the more it's obvious that it is completely just unacceptable. The way that her father had used high tech surveillance against her, they bugged her bedroom. And so any conversation she was having with her lover in her bedroom, he heard, it got audio tapes of, not being able to make her own reproductive choices. Like, this issue hits so many intersections of things that we really should care about.
Yeah, 100%. And I'm glad that there's been, you know, much more transparency about it. Like, I don't remember exactly when it started, but as of just a few years ago, I don't remember really hearing basically anything about any of this. And in theory, the information was available. I don't know what exactly changed that suddenly it started to get out. But I'm glad that it did. I watched that most recent documentary about it. The bugging of her bedroom in particular, like the father, the fact that the father would be a party to that is just absolutely disgusting. Let alone the just basically treating her as like a money sponge. Like, he's just trying to get money from her. That's it. And he doesn't care what happens to her, making her go to like mental health rehab because she wanted to take some time off of working. Like, there's a lot of details there. By the way, I'm having people in the chat that are asking if the judge is making a pun with the toxic thing. No, I do not believe that the judge is making a pun, if I had to guess. But the only other thing I really want to say is people believe that the about face by the father and by the legal team of the father is less about acknowledging what has gone wrong and wanting to finally do what's right for Britney, and more about sort of protecting himself from liability. And I will say, I hope that that does not work, because it sounds like there's quite a bit of illegal activity that was going on. He should not be able to just walk off, likely with millions of her dollars. He definitely needs to be investigated, and not just him, but foremost amongst all of them, the father definitely needs to be investigated. Any final thoughts?
Completely agree. I think that he's trying to cover his butt and walk away from this and have people not ask too many questions. And I think that's completely unacceptable. I think that there needs to be a deep investigation about how this woman was taken advantage of and by who for so long.
Yeah, and I hope like this might be the individual like sort of worst high profile abuse of the conservatorship thing. But I really hope that this causes our country, the judicial system, to take a second look at this for other people who don't necessarily have the high profile of a Britney Spears, but are otherwise being taken advantage of. I know there was a movie about this recently, and John Oliver did a great episode about the conservator thing, but this should not end with just freeing Britney, even though that is objectively a good thing. And by the way, like a lot of people, we saw the thing that she put on Instagram. It was like a photo of her in a plane and her saying that she's on cloud nine. As a result of it, that's obviously great news and love that.
Yeah.
That said, we have just a few minutes more. So why don't we jump into our final story? I think that we can talk about this. Really tragic story occurring not far from where we're recording this, actually. An 18-year-old woman who was shot by a school safety officer near a high school in Long Beach is going to be taken off of life support by her family within 24 hours. This woman is Mona Rodriguez, mother of a 5-month-old boy. So I want to tell you about what resulted in her being shot. She was reportedly in a physical altercation with a 15-year-old student outside of a Coffee Bean when the school safety officer saw the fight from a safety vehicle and intervened. Rodriguez got into a vehicle which began driving away, and the school safety officer shot at the car as it drove away. Now, one of those who was in the car is the boyfriend of Mona Rodriguez, Rafael Chowdhury, who said, "I just want justice for my girl, my baby mama, my love of my life that I can't get back ever again. I don't know what to do with my 5-month-old son." But he did give details on what actually happened, and it's just as terrible as this description so far would imply. Chowdhury said he was the driver of the car that was shot at by the school safety officer. Rodriguez was in the passenger seat when she was shot. Chowdhury's 16-year-old brother was in the back seat. Chowdhury said the officer had warned Rodriguez and the girl he would pepper spray them if they didn't stop fighting, but he says they did stop and the officer made no further warnings before opening fire. Again, not with pepper spray, with a firearm. Chowdhury says, "All we did is we got in the car and left. He never told us to stop anytime soon, and the way he shot us, it wasn't right. One of the two bullets fired in the car struck Rodriguez in the back of her head." And so this is a school safety officer who, by the way, they have guns. I know, I see people in the chat. We were shocked to find out that some of them do have guns. None of the people in the car were armed. The fight that the school safety officer witnessed was not between people who were armed. The fight had already ended and they were driving away. But people with guns use their guns. That's what they do. And so this woman is likely to lose her life within 24 hours as a result of this. Bridget, what are your thoughts?
It's just heartbreaking. And I think the things that you were raising are so apt. You know, even the idea that school safety officers would be armed, the idea that he would be breaking up a fight that's not happening at school, it's happening at a different location, and that he would fire into a car of people who were driving away. The situation sounds like it was pretty much de-escalated. I don't know in what world a safety officer thinks firing into a car of people driving away is a safe move.
Yeah. Yeah, and like I guess we're doing this too. This person is being identified as a school safety officer. I would describe this person as a murderer. You're just out in open, people had an incident, one's leaving, and you murdered one of those people. That's it. You weren't stopping any crimes, you weren't saving a life. You're not a police officer. By the way, while Long Beach's school safety officers wear a uniform and carry a firearm, they're not sworn peace officers and are not required to have previous law enforcement experience, although in my personal experience, that would only make it more likely that they would end up shooting someone. And so you're just a person with a gun that decided to shoot someone, as far as I can tell. And right now, that person is on paid administrative leave. That's consequences for you. By the way, the family of Mona Rodriguez does have a GoFundMe. If you search for it, Help the Rodriguez Family, you can find that. We can put up a screenshot and you can see, obviously, you know, there's a lot of costs associated with this, a devastating story. That's what it is. Bridget, Want to thank you. Sorry we're ending on a down note, but thank you as always for joining us. It's great to have you on. Everyone definitely go on iHeartRadio. There are no girls on the internet. Thank you as always.
Thanks so much for having me.
We'll be right back.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.